Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 19, King Yayati Achieves Liberation, Text 4. Tasya Udharanopayam Basta Kami Vichintayan Vyadata Tirtham Udhritya Vishanagrena Rodasi Tasya Udharanopayam Bastakami Vichintayan Vyadata Tirtham Udhritya Vishanagrena Rodasi Tasya Udharanopayam Bastakami Vichintayam Vyadata Tirtham Udhritya Vishanagrena Rodasi Tasya Udharanopayam Bastakami Vichintayam Vyadata Tirtham Udhritya Vishanagrena Rodasi Tasya Panaranopayam Pastakami Vachintayam Tamutumutritya Vishanagrena Rodasi Kami Vachintayam Tamutritya Rodasi Anupayam Stakami Vachintayam Asantamudritya Vishnagrena Rodasi Tasya Udharanopayam Vasikami Vichintayam Vidata Tirtham Udhritya Vishanagrena Rodasi Vaishnavis Tasya Udharanopayam Pastakami Vichintaya Anasana Tamudritya Rodasi Yakami Vichintaya Anavita Mujitya Anagrina Rodasi Tasyaha of the she-goat Udharana Upayam the means of deliverance from the well. Bastaha, the he-goat. Kami, having lusty desires. Bichintayan, planning. Vyadata, executed. Tirtam, a way to come out. Udritya, digging the earth. Vishana agrena, by the point of the horns. Rodasi, at the edge of the well. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. After planning how to get the she-goat out of the well, the lusty he-goat dug up the earth on the well's edge with the point of his horns in such a way that she was able to come out very easily. Please repeat. After planning how to get the she-goat out of the well, the lusty he-goat dug up the earth on the well's edge with the point of his horns in such a way that she was able to come out very easily. Purport. Attraction for woman is the impetus for economic development, housing, and many other things meant for living comfortably in the material world. Digging up the earth to make a way out for the she-goat was a laborious task, but before accepting the she-goat, the he-goat underwent this labor. Aho griya chetra sutapta vitaya janasya mahoyam ahamameti. The union between male and female provides the impetus for gaining a nice apartment, a good income, children, and friends. Thus, one becomes entangled in the material world. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in this chapter, we're getting a perspective on dealings between the sexes, between male and female. And we can see that it's a very complicated situation. Of course, the ultimate goal is prema pumarta maham. The ultimate goal of human life is to develop pure love for Krishna. And in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're going to be presented with Krishna's loving pastimes with his associates. And that's what we're aspiring for, to enter into those pastimes. But in order to get there, we have to get through our position in the material world. And part of getting through that situation is learning how to deal with our relationships, our social relationships, and our personal relationships with the opposite sex. So we're getting information about that. What can go wrong? What can go right? So these are things that we all have to sort out in our individual ways as we make progress towards the goal of entering into Lord Krishna's eternal loving pastimes as one of his eternal associates. So Varnashram society is meant to help people work through these situations. So there's Varna, which means one's occupational duties. Everyone has to figure out one's occupational duty, what one is going to do in this world. And one also has to figure out one's ashram situation, what one's relationship is going to be with the opposite sex. So there are ideal situations, you know, that we can see described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but then we also see problematic situations described also, because not everyone gets through these things in the ideal way. So the, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam is also presenting us with the problematic situations that sometimes arise and how it's possible to work through them. And in this chapter, we're getting an example of that. So in this particular verse, it's being mentioned how, you know, the he-goat was attracted to the she-goat who was in a well, but to get her out, he had to engage in some labor. And that's signified by his digging with his horns at the side of the well to make an exit for the she-goat. And in his purport, Srila Prabhupada says in the first sentence, attraction for woman is the impetus for economic development. And you know, several times in his lectures and conversations, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that, you know, as a student at Scottish Churches College, he had an economics course. And in this economics course, you know, he mentioned he had to study what he called Marshall's economics. So, I mean, one of the instances where he talks about that was in a Bhagavad Gita class that he gave in Bombay, 8 April 1974. And he said at that time, there is one Mr. Marshall, economist. Marshall's economics we read in our economics class. He said that, quote, family affection is the impetus for economic development. He said that. That is a fact. A married man becomes responsible because there is affection, family affection. And one who is not married, he's irresponsible. So we can see our rock-solid householder devotees here, our Grihastha community, with responsible men and women. So, and then there are the irresponsible unmarried people. But, you know, decided to look this up, you know, this Marshall, and it actually turns out there was an economist, an English economist named Alfred Marshall, and he was quite a prominent economist. And, you know, he wrote a textbook called Principles of Economics that was studied at colleges and universities all over the English-speaking world. And on the web, I found this textbook. It's still read even today, even though it was first written in 1890. But in it, you know, he does say what Srila Prabhupada says he said. He wrote, "We have seen that the accumulation of wealth is governed by a variety of causes, by customs, by habits of self-control and realizing the future, and above all, by the power of family affection." So that's exactly what, you know, Srila Prabhupada was saying. You know, he said, Marshall said, you know, the family affection is the impetus for economic development. And that point is being made in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, said, you know, during one of his talks, he was recalling his life in India, and he said he had a connection with an English pharmaceutical firm, and he had a relationship with the owner of this firm, and he was saying the owner would carefully consider anybody who wanted to become his employee. And the main thing he wanted was that the person, the employee, be married, because he thought this will be a responsible person. Yeah, because he has family responsibilities, he won't, you know, just be hopping from one job to another. So that point is there, and Srila Prabhupada, you know, made it. And he quotes in this purport a verse from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The entire verse is Pumsa Striya Mituni Bhavam Etam Tayor Mito Vidya Grantim Ahu Ato griya chetra tsutapta vitayar janasya mohoyam ahamameti. Pumsa striya mituni bhavam etam. So pumsa means male, striya means female, mituni means affectionate relationship, you know, the affectionate relationship between male and female, the attraction between the sexes, in other words. And it's described as bhava, you know, a very strong emotion, mituni bhava metam. And it's so strong, tayor hridaya grantam, it results in a very tight knot being tied in the heart. And then from that, attraction, that knot in the heart, as it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, come so many things. Griha, you know, there has to be some apartment or house. And, you know, some people, they put quite a bit of attention into having the exact kind of apartment or house, you know, that they want. You know, maybe even spending millions and millions of dollars for huge mansions and things like that. And then there also has to be some chetra. Chetra means field, and that in traditional Vedic society, that could mean some actual field, some land, because everyone requires some sustenance, some kind of work that can sustain their life. And it could be by possessing an actual field that one works agriculturally or lets out, leases to others who work it. Or it can just mean any kind of field of activity that one engages in order to support one's life, earn some income. And in Vedic society, there were various ways to do that. And then there's sutta. Sutta means children. That's the natural result of marriage. And then children are a big responsibility, raising them, taking care of them in their infant stage, educating them as children, seeing to their marriage. It's quite a responsibility. Requires quite a bit of effort and money, income, to raise children. And then there's apta. When one enters into a family relationship, one suddenly becomes connected with brothers-in-law, sisters-in-law, mothers-in-law, fathers-in-law. One becomes connected with a whole series of relatives. And then there's the other social relationships beyond one's relatives that one becomes connected with. And then vitaire, one generate, that means wealth. That means if you generate some wealth, you have to do something with it. You have to save it, invest it, do something with it. Everybody's looking for, the best opportunity for investing or saving or, maybe starting a business or something like that. And they're also worried about taxes. What percentage of this wealth is the government going to take? So these things, janasya mahoya mahamameti, one becomes very attached to these things and begins to think in terms of I and mine. So it's a whole series of entangling relationships. Now, in Vedic civilization, there was a system for helping people in this situation deal with all of these various responsibilities and at the same time make spiritual progress. There's the system of Daiva Varnashrama. So, in the system of Daiva Varnashrama, a person, according to their Varna, is allowed to get their income in a certain way. If one is in the Varna of a Brahmana, a spiritual teacher or priest, then one is allowed to exist on the charity of others, of the other Varnas. And in return, such personalities are expected to give spiritual knowledge and guidance and perform sacrifice, lead the performance of sacrifice take care of deities and temples and things of that nature. The Kshatriyas in an ideal Daiva Varnashram society were allowed to take taxes from the people. Not a burdensome amount of taxes, a reasonable amount of taxes. And with that tax money, they were able to maintain themselves, and you know, they could maintain themselves in a suitable way for their position, perhaps displaying opulence to a certain degree, because that was part of their varna responsibilities, to maintain a powerful and opulent position in society. But in exchange, they were to protect the whole society, properly arrange the whole society, and with the excess tax revenues, they were to take care of any emergencies that would arise in the society. They would provide for the defense, they would provide for welfare, they would take care of things if there was some disaster, some natural disaster. That was the ideal situation. So they were able to exist on taxes. For the Vaishya Varna or community, they were to engage in agriculture and trade and business and banking. And from those activities, they were allowed to take some profit. And for the ordinary working people, the artisans and laborers, they were to be maintained by the other varnas in the society. Their basic needs were taken care of. So that was the ideal situation in terms of economic development. But, of course, the whole aim of it was not economic development for economic development's sake. The aim was to satisfy the needs of everyone, the economic needs of everyone, in the most simple, natural, and efficient way possible, while putting most of the human energy into developing Krishna consciousness. So there was a system for doing that, for satisfying the economic needs of society, and while enabling the maximum amount of spiritual advancement for the maximum amount of people. Now, how exactly to do that today, you know, that's a problem that Hare Krishna movement discusses and considers and tries to work out. But you know, the basic point being made here is, in this purport, is that the main impetus for this whole process of economic development is family affection, and there is a way not to be so deeply entangled in that. It's tapasa brahmacharyena sramena cha damena cha. There is brahmachari life, celibate life, and in that situation, one isn't so much entangled in these kinds of activities, and a person in such a situation is able to devote more of their time and energy to the activities of developing one's personal Krishna consciousness and spreading it to others. So that option is there, but it's tapasa, it's an austerity, it's a very severe austerity, and not everyone is able to maintain himself in that position. Therefore, the Grihastha ashram is there. But if it's carried out in the ideal way, it's also, Srila Prabhupada said, a kind of brahmacharya, Grihastha brahmacharis, he would call them, because the same effort is there. When, you know, Srila Prabhupada was writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, there's the part where Lord Chaitanya goes on his tour of South India. Lord Chaitanya left Jagannath Puri and he went to South India. And one of the first towns he stopped at on his tour of South India, he met a Brahmin, householder Brahmin named Kurma. And Kurma received the Lord in his home, and the Lord performed Sankirtan there, and Kurma became very ecstatic, you know, to be participating in the Sankirtan movement. But then after a few days, Lord Chaitanya moved on because he was a sannyasi. So Kurma wanted to leave his home and family. He said, I want to go with you. But Lord Chaitanya told him, that's not necessary. And then Lord Chaitanya spoke a very famous verse, Yare Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Gaya Guruhana Tare Adesh. Stay in your place, Lord Chaitanya told him, but whoever you see, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. Instruct them in Krishna consciousness, and that way become a guru and deliver your place, your desh, your place. And in his purports to those verses, you know, Srila Prabhupada mentioned, it's not necessary to change one's position. It's not necessary to take up the external signs of a sannyasi. One can become renounced, even as a householder, by following that instruction of Lord Chaitanya. You know, whoever you meet, somehow or other, get them to chant Hare Krishna, speak Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to them, and in that way become guru, shiksha guru, diksha guru, and deliver the people in your area. So that facility is there. You know, the Krishna consciousness movement is giving that facility to all varnas and ashramas. And Lord Chaitanya himself said, you know, I'm not a sannyasi, really. I'm not a grihastha. I'm not a brahmana or a vaishya or any of these things. I'm not Gopi Bharta Padakamalayar Das Das Anudas. I am a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord of the Gopis. So ultimately that's what we want, but we have to, in this world, deal with our occupational and social duties. And we're getting some instruction here how we can best do that. Okay, I'll stop there. Any question or comment? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.
On the 21st, they started the Sankirtan.